We next have a DVR presentation. First, we're going to hear from director Dwayne Mays, and he will be followed by Megan Scheel from DVR. So Dwayne is the director, has been the director now for, 2 years, is really involved with making sure that DVR runs well, and that all the programs are accessible to the people who need to be able to receive services. He works all over the state, stays in touch with everything, and is very eager to tell us more, I'm sure. Dwayne, welcome.
I'm the director for the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, and Bonnie is correct. I will have been with the division as the director for, it'll be 2 years this coming January. And before I get into some of the detail of my presentation, Bonnie, how much time do I have?
I'll go ahead and use your 20 minutes, sir.
Okay, 20 minutes. Very good. I think the first topic I want to cover is just the impact of COVID-19 and what that has had on our division in particular. And we have done quite a bit of interaction with our regional partners within Region 10, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. And we have also talked with other states throughout the country just to kind of gauge how they're handling the pandemic and what have they implemented. One of the things that we abstracted from our Region 10 call is that Washington General did a survey, and we asked for a copy of the questions that they used in that survey. And this survey was with their customer, the consumer that's receiving services. How do they feel specific to the pandemic? And so we took that survey that Washington used, and we did that with clients that we're currently serving through the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. And it was good information for us to know, and it helps us to continue to plan to live in this virtual world going forward. So the first thing I'll share with you is that we transferred into our homes, the majority of us, at the end of March. And the data that we have right now indicates that about 70% of our staff are either, they're doing both. They're working from home several days a week, and they may be in the office 1 to 2 days a week. So about 70%. 16% are full-time teleworkers. They're working from home all the time. They're not in the office. And 14% of our staff are working in the office for a variety of reasons. They may not have the ability to connect virtually from home because they don't have that capacity. And so they're working in the office. All of the conditions that we have put into place, you know, work control requirements, keeping our staff safe, we've done that for the 5 regions that we have in the state. So that's been implemented, and so we feel very comfortable that the number of staff, which is small, 14%, as I said, we are confident that they continue to be safe within their offices. So the big part of the survey was to really get information from the client. 79% of respondents agreed or strongly agreed that their counselor keeps in touch with them once a month. So that ongoing connection engagement. So I round that off to 80%. Of the 13% were neutral, didn't really have any comments. And then we had 8% who disagreed that they really felt that they were disconnected from their counselor. 83% felt that they have a strong relationship with their counselor. 14% were neutral, and 3% strongly disagreed. 79%, close to 80%, agreed that the counselor was really tuned into COVID-19. So you can't just not have those kind of conversations with the client sitting across from you without talking about the pandemic. So most of the consumers that we serve felt pretty good about that connectivity. 72% agreed that they were satisfied with the process of their case. 19% were neutral, and about 9% disagreed. So the majority of people either felt like they were satisfied with the progress made to date, and we had about 19% that said they were neutral. So that's good information. This is this piece of the survey, I think, is very telling. 24% of the respondents reported that they were fearful about using services due to COVID-19. So roughly 24%. 10% reported that they have stopped using public transportation. That's a bit surprising to me because I've had multiple conversations with individuals with disabilities talking about the lack of public transportation. So in this survey, 10% stop using public transportation. They're fearful. 25% reported their skills do not match the jobs that are available at this time. We take pride in making sure that the consumer that we're serving, we develop a plan, we have a very specific vocational goal, and then that individual ultimately is placed into that goal. That's going to be a bit more challenging given the fact that there's over 37,000 Alaskans out of work, and that's all happened in the last several months given the pandemic. So what we saw last year is much different today. 20%, close to 80% of people that we surveyed indicated that they felt comfortable with the virtual platform that we use to communicate with them. And that platform is Microsoft Teams, Zoom, GoToMeeting, Skype. So we have a variety of platforms we use. And so 80% of the people that we served said that they felt comfortable. 10% said that they did not feel comfortable with the tools. However, they wanted to learn. They recognized that to stay safe, I need to continue this relationship in a virtual way. So 10% indicated they wanted to learn. So that's good information for us as a division. The other 10% indicated they would rather just have face-to-face meetings. So I didn't mention this, but we are physically closed. So our offices, although we have staff, some staff in our offices, 14%, we are not seeing clients in the office. So that's important to note. Everything that we do in terms of being open for business is done virtually, and it's all online. So that's a pretty good statistic to know, is that 80% are comfortable, 10% want to learn the skill, and 10% are not comfortable and they would rather be in the office meeting with the counselor one-on-one. So good information. So virtually, Alaska DVR, online application process has been modified. We rolled that out the beginning of April of 2020. We've made some modifications to it. In the very beginning, our numbers of individuals applying for services tanked. We were the numbers of what we were accustomed to, we were not seeing given the pandemic. However, over time, because you know we're working with this technology, we're trying to make sure it's user-friendly for the consumer, those numbers are starting to increase. That said, we're not back to the number of individuals that we were serving prior to the pandemic. So that's important to know. So we feel pretty good with the numbers that we have seen in terms of applications coming into our division in August and September. We are doing everything in our power to use social media and other types of platforms to get the word out. We're doing cold calls. If we get somebody online, we keep them online so that we can work with them to go through the paperwork to become a client of our division. So there's no this statement that I'm about to make, there's no methodology behind it other than having robust conversations with other division directors throughout the country. We believe it's just a matter of time. So although consistently throughout the country, the numbers have dropped off because people are afraid to go back into the community to have in-person contact, we know that it's just a matter of time. So we believe within a year or so, we believe we will blow up. We will have many people applying for services. And so we're wanting to be ready for that. And so I'll share with you later that I've been reaching out to our federal delegation because there are some flexibilities that we're asking for that have yet to be recognized by Rehabilitation Services Administration and Congress. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. So we've created a lot of online assessment tools. Everything that we do with the client, we have created those tools online, and to date, they're working. You know, obviously in the very beginning, we had some bumps along the way, but we feel pretty confident that we have been very proactive to make that happen. So our world is a virtual world, hence this conference, NFB. We're doing it virtually. So in terms of just the work, you know, what are we doing as a division? One of the priorities under this administration was to really elevate our efforts around addressing at-risk youth that are coming out of foster care. They're an older teenager. They're now ready to go to work, but there are some issues that need to be attended to. They have some maybe a disability or two that they're attending to, some behavioral issues and so forth. So the Department of Labor has invested into making sure that at-risk youth are not exiting onto the street and therefore becoming homeless. And so we, you know, I could spend an hour talking to you about that initiative, but that's one of our top priorities as a department, is to address at-risk youth. Some of the work that we have done to date. So we've increased the number of blind students from around the state coming into our division. And so therefore, we're now able to access them. Most of those that have come into the system are from the South Central Anchorage area. So we want to do more to make sure that we find them in rural Alaska and bring them into our program. This, I would say, is really attributed to the work that our staff have done, and in particular to the leadership of Megan in terms of the outreach. So we're serving these blind students through our pre-employment, we call it pre-ETS. It's pre-employment dollars that we set aside that we use for students with disabilities that eventually are going to come out of the educational system, and we want them to develop those soft skills and have awareness of work. And so we have that component to our world. We also have the formalized process in terms of becoming an official client within the division. So the work that's happening specific to our at-risk youth, specific to those with that are blind or visually impaired, we believe that we're starting to make some progress. So know that this at-risk youth initiative is a statewide initiative. And this is not specific to Anchorage, but it's statewide. The next piece is senior employment. We have committed to making it a priority. There's a lot of data out there that indicates that when you look at the overall landscape of Americans and Alaskans with disabilities, about 55% of our population are those that are seniors. Now think about the impact. A senior is working because they want to work. They want to have that social engagement, or they have to work because they don't have enough retirement to be able to live independently. So many of those seniors are being laid off and let go because of the pandemic. So we want to make this a major initiative for the division to address our senior population. And of course, for us, they have to have a disability to qualify. We have invested a lot of money into making sure that we are engaged with the business community. So we have a two-customer approach. We have the client with a disability that we serve, but we also have the employer. So we're doing extensive, we're investing resources and time and doing outreach to the employer community, to businesses. Now, many of them are not in a position to hire right now because of the pandemic, but we take the time to continue to have conversation with them, to support them, so that when they are ready to hire, they will remember the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. So that's important. We also know that it's here. You know, this pandemic, without a doubt, has elevated the importance of the use of technology. We're using it right now in terms of this virtual platform. But technology is here, and it is going to be a part of our world going forward. So we need to really be a part of those changes that occur, the modernization that will happen, given some of the new technology that will come out. So technology is a critical priority for not only the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, for the state as a whole. The Business Enterprise Program, there was a definite impact on the Business Enterprise Program given the pandemic, COVID-19, but we are surviving. We worked with our blind vendors to offset the loss of income that they experienced within the first 6 months of the pandemic. Right now, at this point in time, all of our sites are open except for one. We continue to not lose sight of our vision in that we want to do a facelift of existing state sites. I think, and I would say there's about six of those. So when I came in as a division director working with the leadership of the Business Enterprise Program, I did a round robin looking at some of the sites. I could tell that they needed a facelift. So we approached this administration and this governor, and we were able to receive a capital request of about $600,000 to provide those upgrades to those existing sites. There is no other state that has been able to do that. So I want you to hear that from our division, from the work that we did within the division. We were successful, even though the economy is struggling, to get that capital request. We've updated our policies and rules. They're still in draft. You know, we have a structure that we have to follow. follow to include the Blind Vendors Committee, but we have invested into updating our policies and our rules. When I say rules, I talk about regulations. We know that it's time to modernize the BEP. You can't hang on to the past. You can't continue to operate without addressing some of the changes that are necessary to stay up with the technology, what's going on in this world. So modernization is important. And we're upgrading and elevating our communication throughout the country with other states. So one of the successes I believe we will have is to partner with other states and to talk to other business enterprise programs as to what they're doing. If we operate in a vacuum, we will fail. If we operate collaboratively, we will succeed. So that's important. We're excited. You know, we were sad that Sue Ellen retired from state government, but we're excited that Megan Scheel is our new statewide coordinator for the blind. You're going to hear from her right after myself. Megan has been with us for a long time. She has a really solid skill set, and she has the credentials to be able to do this type of work. So we're pretty happy and excited about that. We have had in the last year, prior to the pandemic, we had a couple blind services roundtable discussions with internal and external partners. That when I say external, I'm talking about the Alaska Center for Blind Adults. So we work closely with this group to take a look and look, how are we doing? You know, the work that we've been doing for years, what do we need to do to really upgrade our efforts, to really modernize how we approach service delivery? So we've had those meetings, and then the pandemic arrived. So just know that we're invested into making sure that that we are modernizing the blind services world, how we provide services. So just know that. And the pandemic has kind of blocked our ability to do that, but we're moving forward. We're going to make it happen. I want to thank you. I always appreciate getting an invite to be a part of this annual conference. So thank you for that.
Megan is who Dwayne was talking about. I've known Megan for a lot of years. She's definitely a diligent counselor who tries to find ways to support clients. And I've seen her really go above and beyond the call of duty to make sure that someone gets some device or support, counseling, whatever it might be, testing. So I've definitely appreciated that.
My name is Megan Scheele. I am the new state blind services coordinator. I thought that because I'm coming to you in a new role this year, that I might do something that I don't normally do, which is kind of tell a little bit about my story to start. So I was born sighted. In fact, I had fabulous vision, and I had fabulous vision until about seventh grade when I got my first floater. And my mom didn't know that the floater was a bad thing to have. And that summer, I ultimately ended up having multiple laser treatments for a condition that nobody knew what it was. Still to this day, no one knows what I have and why I have it. But I didn't lose much vision at first. And I went through my high school years and into my college years. I started going to the university here in Anchorage for my bachelor's in psychology. And I could still see pretty well. And right around the age of 23, that progressive losing of my vision kind of hit me. And I was just about to finish my bachelor's degree. And then I slowly lost more and more and more. And I was legally blind by the time I went for my master's degree and in education and the guidance and counseling of adults. And by the time that I went for my rehabilitation certification, I was even more blind. And so now I've kind of lived the gamut. I've lived life as a sighted person, and I now consider myself a blind person. My education, you know, obviously the psychology degree, the master's in counseling and guidance of adults, and the certification in rehabilitation. I have worked about 16 years for the Division of Vocational Rehab here in Anchorage. I've been the blind services counselor here in Anchorage the whole time. What's really interesting about our division, you know, we are a combined agency. And not all states are combined. There are some states who have a division of voc rehab, but they also have a commission for the blind. And so as a combined agency, we really take our responsibilities seriously because we need to be able to provide quality blind rehabilitation to Alaskans who experience visual impairments. And so here in the state, we got that echo. We have a blind services team. We have a very large state, and we recognize as a division that we need counselors who have specific knowledge and skills to work with individuals who are visually impaired. And so we've identified a counselor in each of our regions who are a part of our blind services team. And so I want to give a shout out to the counselors and the clients on their team. So in Anchorage, even though I am the state coordinator now, I'm still going to be the blind services counselor here in Anchorage. So I'm not sure who's online, but I give a shout out to all my peeps who are on Team Megan. And then in Fairbanks, we have Lizzie. Lizzie Eddy. Lizzie's been a part of our team for many years, and she does the northern region. So I give a shout out to Lizzie and all her peeps who might be working with her right now. In the Southeast, we have a new counselor to our team. Her name is Sharon Moore. We're very excited to have her. She is currently getting a certificate in blind rehabilitation through Mississippi. And so I want to give a shout out to Sharon and any on Team Sharon who are working with her. In the Valley, we also have a new counselor, new blind services counselor. Her name's Diane Forrester, and she was lucky enough to be mentored by Sue Ellen O'Connor before Sue Ellen retired. And so she's had a good start to the world of blind rehabilitation. And so I want to add one more person, Erin Martin in the Kenai. Although she's not specifically identified as a blind services counselor, she has been extremely active and connected with us. And we really are so appreciative of Erin Martin, who is working with some Kenai folks right now. So I give a shout out to those clients who might be on and Erin. And so my job as the state coordinator is I make sure that all of our blind specialty counselors feel supported, and that they have the continued development of their knowledge and skills to be able to provide those quality services. And so I think I'll transition into why should somebody come to DVR and speak to one of our counselors? You know, we're state government and, going blind or having blindness, we can have a lot of fear and emotions involved in that journey that we go through. And so why should we come see one of these counselors? And these counselors, they just don't decide one day, oh, I'm going to be a counselor. And the next day they're a vocational rehabilitation counselor. There's a lot of preparation involved in becoming a counselor for the Division of Voc Rehab. And it's a lot of time and a lot of energy. And we all come to it in a variety of different ways. Some of us experience a disability. Some of us have family members or friends who have had a disability and they come into contact with Voc Rehab. And some folks just learn about voc rehab and know that's exactly what they want to do. And so they start on this journey, and it takes a bachelor's degree and then some. You have to have a master's degree in order to even sit for the certification exam to be a voc rehab counselor. So you have to have a lot of passion in what you do to be a vocational rehab counselor. And every counselor that I've ever worked with in the division over all these years, they are passionate about working with people with disabilities. You might be the most interested in your success, but second to none, your vocational rehabilitation counselor is going to be just as passionate to see you be successful in reaching your goals. So what you can expect when you go see a vocational rehab counselor is you're going to meet with somebody and really talk about who you are and what you're experiencing. And together, you're going to work and develop your vocational rehabilitation plan. And that plan is going to include all the things that you need to reach that goal, whatever it is. The services we normally start out with, and we heard a little bit about this morning during the keynote, is there's a lot of rehabilitation services, compensatory skills services. So orientation and mobility, making sure you feel great with travel, making sure you feel confident in your technology use, making sure you feel confident at home, using your appliances, cleaning, all those things we do just in independent living, shopping, and just being really comfortable using our hands. Our hands become very important as we lose our vision. You can expect to go through a vocational evaluation to determine what your vocational goal is and what your skills and abilities are and if it's a good match for you as a person. And I thought I would highlight today several of the job positions that we have had success with lately for people with significant visual impairments. So some of the outcomes have been school teachers, massage therapists, food service managers, baristas, IT specialists, executive directors, program managers, rehabilitation counselors. We have some janitorial. We have kitchen staff. There is a wide variety of jobs. Oh, we have attorneys. I know of two attorneys that have rehabbed with the Alaska Division of Oak Rehab. So there's a wide variety of vocational outcomes a person with a visual impairment can accomplish. As Dwayne said, we have right now an application online, so you can go to our internet site, the Alaska Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. It's under the Department of Labor. We have an online application that should be screen reader accessible, and you can complete it online. And this will start the process of you getting in contact with a counselor who serves the blind. I'm located here in town, and anyone can always contact me here in town. My phone number, if this is going to be on something later, is 907-269-2077. And you can call me from anywhere in the state, and I will hook you up with the counselor who will serve your region. I want to cut this a little bit short because I know we're going a little bit over and I don't want to set everything off. So I'll end there with my contact information and just end by saying we are open for business and we are trying to locate as many individuals who are interested in going to work as we possibly can, starting at the age of 14, to whenever someone wants to retire. We are here. Our doors are open virtually at least. And, we hope if you haven't taken that step to contact, Voc Rehab that you go ahead and take that first step. And we hope to hear from you soon.
So Megan, you know, your comments are great. Thank you so much. I try to refer people to you as often as I can. Thank you again for sharing your comments.